Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, July 17th, 2018. What do some Juba residents think of the arms embargo?
It will limit the conflict that started from 2013 up to now because it will not allow the both sides to acquire weapons.
And some Keju residents call on officials there to stop what they call repeated killings and rapes in their area.
Whenever they are met with the military personnel, you know, you find that the people become scared or sometimes they are harassed. You find these women are raped, and small girls are raped.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Juba residents are expressing mixed reactions toward last week's UN Security Council's decision to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan. Some residents in the capital say the move is too late, while others say cutting the flow of weapons to South Sudan might pressure the warring parties to finally end the conflict in the country after nearly 5 years. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The Security Council narrowly approved the U.S. drafted resolution over objections that it could hurt regional efforts to end the nearly five-year conflict. Negotiators for the government and South Sudanese armed and unarmed groups continue to meet in Khartoum to come up with an agreement on power sharing and other contentious issues. South Sudan government officials have called the decision unfortunate, but a Juba resident, Peter Jock, says restricting their arms flow into South Sudan will force the warring parties to sign a peace agreement.
It will limit the conflict that started from 2013 up to now because it will not allow the both sides to acquire weapons and then the guns to come and use it to fight with each other. And that move, I think, it will force the both parties to bring peace back home.
Another Juba resident who only identified herself as Dorothy for fear of government reaction says the embargo has come too late.
They would have done it earlier, for example, let's say immediately after the 2013 crisis. But now, 6 years down the line, they have not done it. A lot of arms have infiltrated in South Sudan. So it's really a big challenge. Whether they pass that arms embargo, I don't think if it's going to have any impact.
Dorothy says at this point, most South Sudanese already are armed with weapons from neighboring countries.
Maybe what they should do is to see how the arms that have already entered here, infiltrated in here, how it can be removed. Because now it's like even apart from the government, everybody's armed. All civilians are armed. So what are we going to do to see to it that the arms are removed from civilians?
Another Juba resident who did not want to be identified for fear of government reprisal says he supports any decision to cut the flow of arms into South Sudan.
If they are coming to stop it, it is right. It's okay. It's okay. Because for us, we just need let people stop killing because we need to live in peace.
Resident Florence Idonoka says what is important for South Sudan is peace, not punitive measures. She urged the country supplying South Sudan with weapons to consider the suffering and the killing of innocent civilians across the country.
I think those who are bringing the guns, they should be told not to bring these things in. Where do they bring these things, the guns from? Where the source where they bring these things can be controlled with those who are supposed to control it. And it is true. We are tired of seeing these guns even.
The embargo on South Sudan is to remain in effect until May 2019. The resolution includes a travel ban and an asset freeze on South Sudanese military officials Malek Ruben Riak and former army chief turned rebel leader Paul Malong Awan, both of whom are listed as threatening the peace in South Sudan and prolonging the country's ongoing conflict. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some Keje residents are pleading with state officials to end what they say is the violence in their town and to hold human rights abusers accountable. One local community leader claims that over 2,000 civilians are trapped in various parts of the town and are being subjected to killings and torture by both government and opposition forces. Yei River State Governor Emmanuel Adil blames armed groups for the crimes being committed against civilians. Daniel Martin Friday has more for VOA from Yei.
Community leader Amos Longa Modi says despite the recent permanent ceasefire agreement signed in Khartoum by the warring parties, civilians continue to suffer at the hands of the armed groups and government forces.
Whenever they come back to their villages, either to get some of their cassava or maize, whatever is in their garden, whenever they are met with the military personnel, you know, you find that the people become scared or sometimes they are harassed. You find these women are raped, and small girls are raped. This is what caused to civil-military relationship to become poor.
Koengi Pony is a woman leader in Kajukeji County. She's calling on the government to crack down on perpetrators of sexual violence so that the practice of human rights abuses against women and girls comes to a halt.
As the women of Greater Kajukeji, we wanted all these things to come down. Things like raping girls, young girls, and even many things. Many people have seen it, and I saw it. Really bad things have been happening. The truth can be said out so that the truth can set us free.
Another resident who identified himself only as chaplain for security reasons says since the outbreak of the conflict in 2016, Yei River State has failed to document human rights abuses cases and bring the abusers to justice. Chaplain is urging independent human rights monitors to visit Kajukeji to investigate crimes committed against civilians.
Our leaders should be accountable to their people. They should be able to respect the rights of others, because we are saying improve rule of law in Greater Kajukeji community, so that at least people who do mistakes, who do things that are wrong, are brought to justice.
Amos Longa says police will be immediately deployed to his village to protect the civil population.
We need to stop bloodshed. We need to stop war. We are tired. I don't want to hear that somebody is killed. This must stop from now.
Yei River State Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony says the continued human rights violations in Kajukeji are being committed by the armed opposition forces. Speaking in Arabic, Adil says police and national security forces will be deployed to Kajukeji so that human rights violators are arrested and prosecuted.
The national security forces will be sent to Kajukeji County, and once they reach to the area, the SPLS soldiers will be redeployed outside Kajukeji town to enable civilians return to the town. Police will also be sent alongside the national security in the next few days so that the civilians will be protected.
Lampol Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLA-IO, denies human rights violations were committed by his group.
But now, if you continue attacking them, what do you want us to do? Are we not supposed to defend ourselves? In our territory, they are complying with the rule of law. We are very busy, but because the civilians are suffering, both of us, we want them to respect the rule of law and make sure that, okay, first of all, you have to start by a position of resistance. And the violence is fire. We say there's no more movement. But as long as they are moving, then they are not respecting the rule of law.
Last week, in an audio clip making the rounds on social media, the SPLA-IO Sadok governor for Imatong State, General Nathaniel Oyet, was heard giving orders to SPLA-IO soldiers to become, quote, unknown gunmen, end quote. The following audio is believed to be that of General Oyet giving the orders in colloquial Arabic.
We cannot take our soldiers to a government base because it will be a violation. If they violate it today, we will take the direction of the unknown gunmen, and we want all the brigades to look and work on the style of the unknown gunmen, because they might go out in number of about 5 to 6 soldiers far away from the base and loot, and we want our brigades to work in that style.
Lam strongly denies General Oyet instructed SPLA-IO forces to attack civilians. Lam calls the audio fake. Human rights groups say since the outbreak of the conflict in 2016, extrajudicial killings and other atrocities have been committed against civilians in Kajukeji County, forcing thousands of civilians to cross into neighboring Uganda as refugees. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday-Martin in Yei.
Locally made sanitary pads are helping many girls in South Sudan to attend school on a regular basis. Many girls from poor families often miss classes during their monthly menstruation. They say they feel ashamed to go to school when they have their periods because they have no sanitary products. One of the girls at the New Generation Primary School says she now feels relieved because she doesn't have to buy expensive sanitary pads in the market, and neither do her parents. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA on the difficulties facing South Sudanese girls in school.
Today is the National Girls Education Day in South Sudan, and some schoolgirls in Juba say a locally made reusable sanitary pads is giving many schoolgirls hope to continue with their education. Many girls miss classes because they cannot afford to buy sanitary pads and feel ashamed when boys make fun of them while they are menstruating. 16-year-old Lillian is in primary 8 in Juba. She smiles confidently as she plays with her peers in the school compound. Lillian says she used to miss school quite often when she was having her period because she did not want to be humiliated in class.
Some boys in the school here, when they see a blood on your clothes, they will start laughing at you. And you will feel ashamed of being staying in class. Immediately staying in the class, immediately you'll go home. And you go and stay there almost for 1 week. Then you come back. And still, the boys will still talking.
But now, Lillian says she regularly attends school and sits comfortably in her class and enjoy her lessons without fear of being laughed at by boys. She says that is because her sanitary pads made by local women give her all the protection she needs during her periods.
I always use the local ones. Sometimes you can stay with it from morning up to evening. It helped me to be coming to school and to be active in class.
Viola, another Juba P8 student, says the reusable sanitary pads relieve her and her parents from having to buy new pads every month.
Sometimes when you go to the market, you find that the prices of the always is high, and if you don't have money, you make the clothes and you use it. You make your always, and you use it. It will make you to feel free in the class, and you will not always think of going out of the class or missing school.
On this National Girls Education Day, a local organization known as Together in Transformation Initiative is being recognized for producing local sanitary pads to give more girls an opportunity to go to school and complete their studies. Together in Transformation Initiative Foundation is training about 20 mothers on how to make sanitary pads. Rhoda Kagendo is the trainer at the foundation. She says some sanitary towels sold in markets in Juba are not good.
There are many challenges in the market. You can see they have expiring date. And you see when they have expiring date, sometimes a girl can use when it's already expired. And then some cases it is bringing some infections in a girl. And these infections can sometimes they bring even implementary diseases. Sometimes the infections are not treated. Whereby when a girl, she grows a big, she'll get a problem of infertility. This one, the advantage of this pad, this one you cannot just use and dispose. This one is washable. When you use, you just wash it. It will take you 1 month, 2 months, up to 6 months, according to how you maintain it. But the one of the shop, use immediately, then you deposit it.
Rhoda says she has trained the first batch women on how to make the reusable sanitary pads. She says many of these mothers will be dispatched to their communities to make the pads so that girls can stay in school. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Will the DRC soon be declared Ebola-free? Find out when we return.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
have you ever had to deal with a bully? What did you do?
When I was in lower primary, we had pupils who were bullies. They would offend you or try to attack you or provoke you or mock you. For personally, I ignored the bully. I just ignore them and they will stop.
I do just ignore. I see them as if they have not done anything to me. I've never responded to what they do. And sometimes you might look at it as if the person is just trying to talk to him or herself. That's how I've ever dealt with bullying in school.
Just ignore it. Ignore that person. If that person so rash on you, you just take it easy. And yeah, just like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time now for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. The World Health Organization says it expects the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo to be over on July 24th. That will mark 42 days, two incubation periods of 21 days each, since the last patient infected with the Ebola virus was released from care. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The countdown toward the end of the Ebola outbreak in the DRC started on June 12th. If no other cases of this fatal disease are identified by July 24th, the DRC's Ministry of Health will announce the end of the disease the following day in an elaborate ceremony in the capital, Kinshasa. The World Health Organization says that from April 4th, when Ebola was first detected, through July 9th, there have been 38 confirmed cases, including 29 deaths. This is the ninth outbreak of this fatal disease in DRC in the past four decades. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA the World Health Organization and partners were able to contain the virus in record time because of lessons learned from the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014 and 15. That epidemic killed more than 11,000 people. She says everyone involved in the operation reacted rapidly and robustly to this emergency. She says better use also was made of the tools available for fighting Ebola.
This time we had a new tool that we didn't have before, a vaccine. And potentially this also made it easier to explain to the population that even if it's a serious disease, we can stop it and we have a vaccine to help stop it.
It only takes one case of Ebola to set off a fast-moving epidemic. So Shaib says it is important to quickly mobilize to combat the disease. She says WHO and partners will not let down their guard. She says active surveillance for Ebola continues and every suspected case will be promptly investigated. She says the National Survivors Association is being created to provide essential medical follow-up and psychosocial support to those who have been stricken with the disease and fortunately have lived to tell the tale. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Former U.S. President Barack Obama honored Nelson Mandela today, recalling how the late South African leader inspired him and the rest of the world. In a speech the day before the 100th anniversary of Mandela's birth, Obama gave a lecture with echoes of Martin Luther King's I Believe speech that clearly aimed to inspire.
I believe in Nelson Mandela's vision. I believe in a vision shared by Gandhi and King and Abraham Lincoln. I believe in a vision of equality and justice and freedom and multiracial democracy built on the premise that all people are created equal and they're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. And I believe that a world governed by such principles is possible and that it can achieve more peace and more cooperation in pursuit of a common good. That's what I believe. And I believe we have no choice but to move forward. That those of us who believe in democracy and civil rights and a common humanity have a better story to tell. And I believe this not just based on sentiment, I believe it based on hard evidence.
And Obama brought up the continuing struggle of women to gain equality and better lives.
Women and girls around the world continue to be blocked from positions of power and authority. They continue to be prevented from getting a basic education. They are disproportionately victimized by violence and abuse. They're still paid less than men for doing the same work. That's still happening.
Obama also criticized the rise of authoritarianism in his speech. While he did not mention his successor, Donald Trump, by name, the inference to the divides in the U.S. were clear.
Look around. Strongman politics are ascendant, suddenly, whereby elections and some pretense of democracy are maintained, the form of it, but those in power seek to undermine every institution or norm that gives democracy meaning. In the West, you've got far-right parties that oftentimes are based not just on platforms of protectionism and closed borders, but also on barely hidden racial nationalism.
And the former U.S. president spoke out against crackdowns on the press and social media, along with the increasing spread of unsubstantiated rumors that are passed on as facts.
The free press is under attack. Censorship and state control of media is on the rise. Social media, once seen as a mechanism to promote knowledge and understanding and solidarity, has proved to be just as effective promoting hatred and paranoia and propaganda and conspiracy theories.
Obama is making his first visit to Africa since leaving office early last year. He stopped in Kenya on his way to South Africa. The first commercial flight between Ethiopia and Eritrea in 20 years is scheduled for tomorrow, another milestone in restoring the ties between those two countries. In just the last few days, Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki has visited Ethiopia's capital, where he met with reformist new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The two even attended a concert together. Yesterday, Eritrea reopened its embassy in Addis Ababa 2 decades after it was closed. Phone links have been restored. Now the two countries are discussing how to jointly build their economies. Just a month ago, tensions remained high after a bloody border war. Now they say their state of war is over, drawing international praise. We turn now to Cameroon, where armed separatists fighting for creation of an English-speaking state have abducted at least 7 traditional rulers they accuse of collaborating with the government. Some of the leaders are also accused of calling for participation in this year's presidential poll against the wishes of the armed groups. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
A choral group of the Our Lady of Victory's Catholic Cathedral in Yaoundé sings at an interreligious church service to pray for peace to return and for the kidnapped traditional rulers to be freed. Reverend Edward Njini of the Baptist Church says it is unfortunate that the separatists have targeted traditional rulers who are simply custodians of ancestral values.
We are praying for them to have courage.
The chief of Wokeka village, Njoke Johnson Njombe, is one of the abducted leaders. In a video released by the separatists, he urged all English-speaking Cameroonians in the northwest and southwest regions not to vote in the October 7 presidential election.
I am telling all the chiefs of the southwest region to come out and support the Ambazonian struggle, so that the Ambazonian people can rightfully get their independence, which rightfully belongs to them.
Ambazonia is the name separatists have given to their would-be states in Cameroon's 2 English-speaking regions. Most of the Central African country speaks French. Johnson was abducted last Friday, along with 6 of his peers, from their homes in and around the town of Boya and taken to an unknown destination. The chiefs had encouraged people to vote on election day and allegedly cooperated with security forces to flush out suspected separatists. The government of Cameroon has called for calm and assured its population the military is working to free the traditional rulers. The separatists have grown increasingly aggressive in recent months. Dozens of policemen and government administrators have been abducted within the past 2 weeks. In March, the separatists kidnapped about 40 people, including Ivan Leketambo, a senior government official. The government says hundreds of people, including more than 100 policemen and soldiers, have died in violence since January, when Nigeria detained and then extradited separatist leader Ayuk Tabe Julius and 46 other alleged separatists to Cameroon. The separatist groups are demanding the 47 detainees who have not been seen in public be released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Finally, Libyan officials say police who checked a suspicious truck found 8 migrants, including 6 children, who had died from suffocation. Another 90 immigrants were taken to hospital, some in serious condition. They were from Africa, Arab countries, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. The refrigerated truck was normally used to haul meat and fish. It is unclear if the victim suffocated from a lack of oxygen or from petrol fumes. The truck was found in the western coastal city of Zuwara. The coastal area is often the starting point for perilous boat crossings of the Mediterranean to Europe. Officials said they recovered life jackets from the truck. Libya's Coast Guard says it stopped a boat loaded with 158 African migrants in the Mediterranean near the western town of Homs on Monday. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 1,000 people have died at sea this year for the 5th year in a row. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you now with the song Me Duo, which means I Do Love You by Joe Metal.
Ooh, 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 yeah. Double, 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 double. My dream, you know, my booming, you know, my deeper dream, you know. Deeper, double, 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 double. All right. Mad dog, need him, you need the deer. Mad dog, I could see her, yeah, yeah. Metobo, mi 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 pedia, petobo a cosi, yeah, yeah. Ube bu a singja no so. Ushe wu moji gu a kavari mami, yeah. Ube bu a singja no so. She will know Jehu or Kava remind me. My dream, Nikra, Mini, Petia, Beto, Wako, see, yeah, yeah, yeah. My dream, Nikra, Mini, Petia, Beto, Wako, see, yeah, yeah. Just a little love song that we want to sing to the Lord. I want all sold-out believers to lift their voice with me. Double, 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 double. All right, everybody, help me sing.
That's Joe Metal with the song Me Duo, or I Do Love You. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here today. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Everybody help me sing. Yeah.
join me and say, set,